The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the ninth message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, June 22nd, 2024.
We're going to continue today with this series that I entitled Habitat for God and Man. This is the ninth message in the series. So we're examining the primary elements that are required to sustain human life on this planet as God designed it. And I know it's a little bit different. I've had feedback from a number of you and on my travels who have told me that they actually appreciate it from a different perspective and to look at some of these same truths from the Bible, but to put them in context of some of the science and the physical aspects of God's creation, hopefully add a little bit of depth, it seems, at least from those who have given me feedback, so I'm glad to hear that. Up to now, we've compared our physical vulnerabilities, meaning because we're physical, that we actually require a habitat to give us everything that we need to live. We're really pretty fickle creatures. And the fact that it takes a lot to keep these bodies alive, even though we easily take it for granted because we have it all in an environment physically, it's easy to take for granted. But we've compared that to the invulnerable nature of God, who needs nothing from an outside environment in order to maintain his life. He really embodies the immortality and the immutability of a spirit being who absolutely needs nothing in order to live and to thrive. And so we, by comparison, need a whole lot in order to keep us alive. So we've compared a number of those aspects. We've looked at the physical elements and also then the spiritual counterparts to give us a type and an antitype comparison to our needs. So the physical needs like air, water, food, shelter, and clothing then all have spiritual antitypes, which are significant in teaching us God's purposes and plans. Last time in particular, we examined how unique the Earth as a planet is within this universe, our solar system, let alone the universe as we know it, as a habitat to support life at all. Lest we think, and there's a lot of human beings out there who just assume, well, because this detailed ecosystem on this planet exists, there must surely be others similar. And so they're out there trying to find them because it's hard for them to believe or to accept the idea that it could exist here in this part of the universe on this particular planet and not have also developed somewhere else. Of course, the assumption is that it happens by fiat, as Raymond Cole would say, or you know, through an evolutionary process short of and without a creator. Well, we know that it doesn't. And so it is absolutely unique in the universe. And so there is a lot that we should be cognizant of and thinking about, and as we thank God for all that he's provided in this very unique ecosystem. So we're going to look at another key element today. We've covered it a little bit. It's kind of hard not to cover it when you talk about all these other things on the planet. But another key element that human beings absolutely need and that this Earth as a planet provides, not existent in the same way anywhere else in the solar system or the universe, is the force of gravity. Now, we refer to gravity quite a lot. I certainly do, because it's one of those laws. It is a law. Scientists recognize it as a law or a force or whatever they want to refer to it, but it's real, it's immutable, it's constant, it's predictable, and so we refer to it as a law, and it is something that God absolutely created, but rather than just something that you have to deal with as a reality, the first point I want to make is you actually need gravity. You actually need gravity to thrive. May not have thought about it, but it's absolutely true. Quick, and I've got a lot of reading to do with scientific stuff. We're going to talk about the law, and I'm going to try and keep it very, very simple and yet still give you a sense, hopefully that will give you an appreciation maybe that you haven't had fully for this particular creation of God, this invisible force called gravity. On this earth in particular, we have a force of gravity at a certain intensity. It's different in every other planet because it varies based upon the mass of those planets. But the gravity on this planet affects your heart, your bones, and your brain function. You may not have realized that, but it does. This constant pressure to push you down to the surface of the earth actually is an element that you need in order to have a healthy body as God designed it. So we know, because of the experimentation that's happened with human beings now that have left the surface of the earth and spend days, months in microgravity. They call it microgravity because there's a little bit of gravity no matter where you are. You don't have to be right on the surface of the planet. So those astronauts that are on the International Space Station or on the Chinese space station that's up there right now going around, they have a little tiny amount of gravity, but not very much compared to what we have down here. And there are major effects that happen to the human body. And one of them is they lose bone density. So physically, to have gravity pushing you down to the earth actually helps your bones to have the right consistency and longevity. They actually say what they've experienced now, these astronauts who stay up for months, 6 months at a time. I think the record holder has been over a year in space, like by some of the Russians. And what happens is that they actually lose bone density, like 1% of their bone density per month. Now, they can mitigate that by aggressive exercise in space. So to try and offset this, they actually have them, you know, like doing the equivalent of treadmill running and lifting, and it's very hard, and they have to have special machines up there in order to mimic gravity, in order to push so that their body pushes against a force, because without it, they're just floating around, and a lot of things will go wrong over time. Now, you still haven't figured out, because they're talking about wanting to go, you know, to the moon, permanent moon bases, Mars, and all this kind of stuff. And I suspect that they're going to find it's much more difficult than they think to try to keep human bodies healthy, because human bodies were designed to be healthy on this earth, not on the moon, not on Mars, not anywhere floating around in space. So again, it's another manifestation of rebellion for man to get outside the realm that God placed him for his good. And so they have to come up with all of these alternative solutions, quote unquote, in order to try and keep their bodies healthy when they don't have the necessary habitat that God designed for them, including the force of gravity on their body. So what are some of the other things? Balance. You know, there's a reason that these astronauts that have been in space for a long time and they come back and they can't hardly stand up, let alone, you know, navigate. They have to relearn it because their brains stop providing for it. And you and I don't probably realize it, especially if you're in decent health. You get up in the morning, you stand up, you have to balance, you have to use, and the muscles in your body actually give you control for posture and center of gravity, that we call it. And all of these movements, which we take for granted until we get sick or we get injured and we can't do it, but these things are actually necessary to keep your body healthy and strong. Your muscles will atrophy in microgravity when you don't have the need and the requirement in order to push and to resist. So this is a requirement for physical health of a human body. Likewise, guess what? Your immune system. Because what these scientists have discovered is that every cell in your body has elements where gravity actually makes them work and function properly. And when gravity is not there, they don't function the same way. Now, a lot of them will not say that they misfunction, but I'm telling you that's what it is. If it's not functioning the way God designed it, then it's a misfunction. And that includes your T cells that have a lot to do with the strength of your immune system. And the T cells don't work the same way when gravity is not present, which I thought was really fascinating, which means human beings without gravity and away from the surface of the earth are actually weakening in their immune system. So what are scientists trying to do to rectify that? Of course, they're going to use drugs or whatever else in order to try to mitigate the effects of the loss, which are all, obviously, we understand are not God's design at all. There's also all kinds of experiments that have been done over the years. There was one back in 1964 that I found interesting by these two scientists called Hubel and Weisel. And it had to do with what happens to the brain when you're not subjected to all of the forces that it's used to and needs to keep the body healthy. And so some of you are going to hate this, but they took a little kitten from birth and covered up one eye with a patch. A healthy kitten, but from birth, it never actually had sight in the eye. There was nothing wrong with the eye whatsoever. And then after, a year or 2 years, they took the patch off and tested, did the cat have sight in the eye? And the answer was no. So literally, the necessity for the brain in that animal to actually be able to function with the light through the optic nerve is necessary for it to actually to be healthy. And when you actually turn it off, nothing wrong with the inherent elements within as it connects to the brain, but when it's not subjected to the outside forces which are required, you actually lose function. And so this is an element that is affecting all of their science concerning what happens when you take human beings out of this human habitat on the earth, because it does affect the brain. And there's a potential for human beings in a long-term microgravity in space to actually start losing brain function. So they've got to come up with all kinds of clever ways to try to mitigate this, especially when they're talking about eventually having people living permanently off Earth, let alone babies being born off Earth. What do they think is going to happen then if you had someone who's never, a human being who's never had the natural force of gravity as God made it, and yet they're born and they live, and especially then if you brought them to Earth for the first time. So all of these interesting philosophical ideas are floating around. The common denominator in all of it is that you're dealing with human beings in rebellion who are resisting what God set up concerning laws that affect these bodies for our health and our well-being. But if you never thought about it, my point is that gravity is an element that you need for your health. It absolutely is. But what is this thing called gravity? I'm going to talk about science a little bit. I've got a number of quotes here from an author, Dr. Don DeYoung, and a website entitled answersingenesis.org. And I like this because obviously he's Bible-based, and so he puts the science in the context of biblical truths, which in this case has some value. And he's got an article entitled Gravity, the Mystery Force. And here's what he says. Gravity holds us firmly on the ground and keeps the earth circling the sun. This invisible force also draws down rain from the sky and causes daily ocean tides. It keeps the earth in a spherical shape and prevents our atmosphere from escaping into space. So there's a synoptic listing of a number of elements, and those are all absolutely true. Turn with me to Job 26, verse 7. Now, where am I going to find a verse in the Bible that talks about the force of gravity? I'm not. So some of you will say, oh, well, so you're going to try and force concepts where they don't really exist for the sake of trying to support it. Well, let me ask you this. If gravity is a real law, it's immutable as God made it. It affects every living creature on the surface of this earth. Do you think that it's not somehow taken into consideration in what God recorded in the Bible? No, he doesn't refer to the law of gravity in particular, but he also doesn't refer to the law of thermodynamics or any of those, or some of those other physical ones. But I would tell you, I think there's a number of scriptures that actually support, and if you put it in context of the science, it might give you a little bit of insight to some of these texts. Job 26, verse 7 is one of them. Here we read, he stretched out the north over the empty space and hangeth the earth upon nothing. So that doesn't say anything about gravity, but what are the physical mechanics of the invisible laws applicable that actually make it appear to human beings from our position on this planet that the earth actually hangs in the universe upon nothing? Well, the primary one is actually this force called gravity. Gravity is a force of law created by God to provide physical order in the universe. I don't think that's a provocative statement. I think it's true based upon what is understood about what gravity actually does, not just on this earth. You think of it just as that which keeps your feet down on the ground. Actually, it was Sir Isaac Newton. I'm going to read you some synoptic statements that actually show it was through Isaac Newton that we came to understand that gravity is not just a force on this earth, but it also interplays the movement of all of the planets. Colossians 1, verse 16 and 17. Colossians 1, verse 16 says, "For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible." So God created things that are invisible. You wonder what they are. "Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers." Are there invisible powers that are real? Yes. And this force we call gravity is one of them. "All things," it says, "were created by him and for him," verse 17, "and he is before all things, and by him all things consist." Awkward in the English, revelatory if you look at what's behind it. What does this mean? By him all things consist. It's the Greek word sunisteo, and it means to cohere, to preserve, to hold together. What is the number one element that actually makes everything that you know physically hold together instead of flying apart and dissipating? It's this God-created law we call gravity. Back to the citation from Dr. DeYoung in this article, Gravity, the Mystery Force. He says the word sunistao here in Colossians 1:17 is used in Colossians in the perfect tense, which normally implies a present continuing state arising from a completed past action. One physical mechanism used is obviously gravity, established by the Creator and still maintained without flaw today. Consider, he says, the alternative. If gravity ceased for one moment, instant chaos surely would result. All heavenly objects, including the earth, moon, and stars, would no longer hold together. Everything would immediately disintegrate into small fragments. Probably didn't ever thought about it that way, but it's true. It's not just about keeping us down on the surface of this planet. That force is throughout the universe. And it has been proved scientifically that it is what keeps everything in an order. If God removed gravity, even if everything else, all the other laws were held intact and he removed gravity, it would all be destroyed. That's how critical it is. Gravity is actually considered by the scientist as a weak force. And that seems counterintuitive. You say, oh, wait, well, no, gravity is strong. It's actually a weak force compared to others, and yet it is a, I'm going to call it a persistent force. It's an immutable force that is relentless. It weakly asserts itself without restraint, which is why it works so well as God designed it. Turn to Hebrews 1, verse 1. Hebrews 1, beginning in verse 1, God, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in times past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom, meaning this Christ, by whom also he made the worlds. So in this case, we're talking about this earth and every other planet, celestial body that exists. And this one, this member of the God family, Jesus Christ, is the one by whom it all came into existence. And that means likewise the forces which make it all stay together, including and especially gravity, who being the brightness of his glory, meaning of the Father's, and the expressed image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. So we read this in terms of the creation, and especially then the spiritual aspects, which are most important. But within this is a confirmation too of some of the physical mechanics that he used literally to create the order that you understand and take for granted in the universe today. Dr. DeYoung says, the word uphold, quote unquote, in this verse means much more than simply supporting a weight. It includes control of all the ongoing motions and changes within the universe. This infinite task is managed by the Lord's almighty word, whereby the universe itself was first called into being. Gravity, he says, the mystery force, which is poorly understood after nearly four centuries of research, is one of the manifestations of this awesome divine upholding. And I think he's right about that. So when you read, that it says of Jesus Christ upholding all things by the word of his power, these physical laws, and especially, well, including gravity, are part of that upholding. All right, what do scientists believe? The limit of their knowledge by research and experimentation, and what have they come to understand? First from Dr. DeYoung again, he says, what is gravity? He says, Isaac Newton asked the question in the year 1686 and concluded that gravity was an attractive force between all odd objects. That's actually accurate. Gravity actually is an attractive force between all objects. He realized that the same force that causes an apple to fall to the ground also holds the moon in its orbit. You may not have known that. And guess what? I'm going to read you a couple of citations that say the ancients, like Aristotle, one, they were way off on it, but even the ones who came afterward didn't understand that. They thought of gravity as only being a force that existed on this earth, but not outside and away from it. But gravity, as Newton came to understand, really is the same force that has everything to do with our moon actually revolving around this planet, let alone all of us revolving around the sun and maintaining the orbits that we depend upon, actually to count time in our months, our days, our months, and our years. And that's all gravity-based. Here is another citation, a little bit of a lengthy one, but I liked it because it keeps it simple. It's from an author, Chris Woodford, from a website entitled explainthatstuff.com, which was pretty cool. But tries to take a lot of complex science stuff and keep it in a simplistic form. So bear with me while I read this to you. He says, gravity is a pulling force, always a force of attraction. That's important because it can be misunderstood, but he explains it. Gravity is a pulling force, always a force of attraction between every object in the universe, every bit of matter, everything that has some mass, and every other object. It's a bit like an invisible magnetic pull, but there's no magnetism involved. What's important about that is, unlike magnetism, and if you've messed with magnets, you can either, depending on how you turn magnets, they will either attract or else repel, right? The difference in gravity, it never repels. Gravity, as a law of force, always attracts. And what is true is that every body that has some mass, and you do, because you have all of these atoms that are all compressed together to make you the physical being that you are, you actually generate gravity. Bet you didn't know that. Now, you don't generate very much, but because you are an object in the universe, you actually generate gravity. It's so imperceptible, we can't measure it. So the ones we measure are the big planets, because their masses are so great and concentrated that they actually have measurable, significant force. But every object, no matter how small, actually generates gravity. Which means, I read one publication that actually said, you, as a human being, literally have an effect on the sun. It's minuscule, it's microscopic, but because you exist in the universe as a cohesive physical body, you are basically drawing every other object towards you. I didn't know that before. But the only ones that have measurable gravity are the ones that are large enough so that their forces are significant, which is why we focus on celestial bodies, and especially our Earth. Continuing with this citation, a subheading called Gravity on Earth, here's what it says. Cars, trucks, airplanes, mosquitoes, your body and everything around you, it's all stuck to Earth by the force of gravity. If we've just said gravity is a weak force, remember I already told you it's a weak force, how is that possible? How can we say that gravity is a weak force? How can such a weak force pull something like a huge jumbo jet down toward the ground? Gravity might be weak, but Earth has a lot of it. Because our planet is so big and we're relatively close to it compared to our distance from the sun anyway, often it helps to think of Earth's gravity originating at a single point at the center of the planet's core. This becomes important to answering a lot of questions. If gravity is a force tugging us toward a point in the center of the planet, why don't we keep on being pulled in? Like a black hole, why doesn't it just suck us through the dirt and the rock? That's what he says. Why doesn't gravity tug you through the floor of your house and the rocks below to suffer a really rather unpleasant death in the heart of the Earth's fiery core deep beneath your feet? If you're sitting still in a chair right now, and everyone here before me in Eugene, Oregon, in this meeting is sitting still in a chair for the most part. So he says, if you're sitting still in a chair right now, it means all the forces on your body are balanced. So the downward pull of gravity must be balanced exactly by another upward pushing force. As gravity tries to pull you down, the atoms in the chair that you're sitting on push back upwards. You can't squash atoms that easily and counteract with what is essentially an electromagnetic force. So when someone stands, it says, on a floor and goes nowhere, the ground is effectively pushing back up against and saying, I will not be squashed. We call the upward pushing force from the ground that balances downward pulling gravity the normal force. So I know that gets a little obtuse, but it's answering the question, if that's why they call gravity a weak force. It's not strong enough like a black hole to pull you relentlessly to your death in the middle of the earth. It only pulls you enough, but resistance by other physical substances then end up giving you an equilibrium as you stand or as you sit. So the quotation continues, just like Earth, every planet or moon has a different amount of gravity. Bigger planets or moons have more gravity than smaller ones. So our own moon has gravity, but it's about 1/6 as much as Earth, because the moon has less mass and it's much smaller. So we're talking about mass, density, the number of atoms that are involved, We like to talk about weight. The scientists don't like weight. They call it mass. Size and mass determines how much gravity an object has. This says, that's why astronauts weigh 1/6 as much on the moon, and why they can jump about 4 times higher in the air when they're there. Jupiter, on the other hand, has gravity. I mentioned this before. Jupiter has gravity too, and because it's bigger and more massive than Earth, you'd weigh almost 3 times more there and struggle to jump very far at all, meaning if Jupiter even had a solid surface, which it doesn't, because of how large it is and how much mass it has, you would weigh 3 times as much. So an individual who weighed 100 pounds on Jupiter would weigh 300 pounds. And how would your muscles and your bones be able to deal with that? Probably not very well. So that's how gravity applies to all masses, not just the Earth. Gravity, it says here, also explains why the universe looks and behaves the way it does. If you've ever wondered why planets are nice round shapes, roughly spherical, and not square boxes, gravity is the answer. By the way, this helps also refute the flat earthers and everything else when you understand these basic laws of science, like gravity. When the planets were busily forming from fizzing atoms and swirling atomic dust billions of years ago, maybe that's the way God did it, maybe he didn't, but this what this author says, gravity was the force that tugged them together. If lots of matter is pulled toward a central point from many different directions, a sphere is what you end up with, just like you end up with a snowball if you pat snow together hard from all sides. Have you ever done that? Literally, you're applying force from around and pushing it, making it tighter and more dense, but you end up with a ball, don't you? You don't end up with a square. And that's really what gravity is doing, likewise, to pull everything into a center point, which is why you end up with relatively round spheres floating around in the universe. Invisible strings, quote unquote, of gravity also explain why the planets dance around one another in the strange cosmic patterns we call orbits. Orbits are there because of the force of gravity. They don't pull everything in and cause them all to collide. Sometimes they do, but it also causes them to have these movements one around the other. Carrying on, it says, how does gravity work? Early scientific ideas about gravity were based on watching how things naturally fell toward the ground. Aristotle, the ancient Greek philosopher who lived about 2,350 years ago, famously believed that heavier things fall faster than light ones, so that if you drop a stone and a feather at the same time, the stone wins the race and hits the ground first. Aristotle was correct in one sense. A stone beats a feather in a race to the ground, but we now know that everything falls at exactly the same rate, and the feather only loses because of air resistance or drag. Drag pushes up against it, slowing it down. So you can test this, and maybe you didn't know this, or maybe you learned it in high school science. But if you can very easily determine this, take a very heavy object that's compact and a light object, which is also compact, and drop them at the same time, and they will both travel at the same rate and hit the floor at the same time. If one of them doesn't have a different composite, which is making it, you know, drag affect it, they literally land at the same time. Why did it take so many years in order for human beings to figure that out? But it did. The person, it says, who figured this out toward the end of the 16th century was Italian astronomer Galileo. According to some historians, Galileo experimented with metal balls on a tilted ramp, quickly concluding that the force of gravity accelerates every object, feathers just like stones, at exactly the same rate, which we now call the acceleration due to gravity, or G. So, as it turns out, The force of gravity is measurable, and it is a constant. And so it's a part of mathematical formulas that physicists use. It never changes. It's always the same. You can count on it. And it applies to all masses of substance, no matter how big or how small they are, that constant G force exerts on all of them. And if you drop, I don't care if you drop, you know, something that's a ton, an object that weighs a ton versus object that weighs, very, very little, you drop them at the same time from the same height, they'll hit the ground at exactly the same moment. So it gives us an interesting insight into this force that God created. This article goes on to say, the real stroke of genius in understanding gravity came from English scientist Isaac Newton. He realized that the force of gravity that makes things fall to Earth is exactly the same as the force of gravitation that keeps the planet spinning around in space. Tell Isaac Newton, we didn't know that, but it's true. According to the popular myth, Newton figured this out when he saw the apple falling in his garden. Maybe, maybe not. Whether that really happened, no one knows, but it was incredibly impressive insight that changed science forever. Building on Kepler's work, Newton calculated that a falling apple experienced the very same gravity as the moon would experience being pulled toward the Earth. That led him to his groundbreaking law of universal gravitation, published in 1687. And that's where we get the formula for the gravitational constant. And it's borne out. Scientists have used it. They do a lot of their astrophysics, understanding the predictability of the force of gravity. Now, Albert Einstein came along and expanded upon the understanding of gravity with his theory of relativity, which adds the effects of time and speed of objects upon gravity. Because Newton's calculation of the gravitational constant is almost but not exactly perfect. So Einstein came along and explained the difference, the small, slight variation, and it has to do then with the speed of an object. So now that gets off into all this real, obtuse stuff, which we don't need to worry about. For the most part, you can assume that gravity really is a constant, and it applies to everything equally, and they do all their calculations with it. One more citation from Dr. Don DeYoung from answersingenesis.org. He says, okay, and this is to kind of culminate the scientific part of it. He says, what really is gravity? After all of that, and I've given you all this information and synoptic scientific knowledge, but in the end, what really is gravity? How is this force able to act across the vastness of empty space, which it does? And why does it exist in the first place? Science has never been very successful in answering these most basic questions about nature. Gravity, he says, cannot somehow slowly arise by mutation or natural selection. What he's saying is the very existence of gravity is also proof of a monumental beginning, not some evolutionary slow emergence of things that exist, including these laws. Gravity's always been there. Or whenever it came into being, it had to come all at once, and it applied all at once. There wasn't a gradual evolution of the law of gravity. There was a time when it wasn't, and then all of a sudden, it was. In its full force in the universe. Gravity cannot somehow slowly arise by mutation or natural selection. It was present from the very beginning of the universe. Along with every other physical law, gravity is surely a testimony to a planned creation. This is exactly what we learned from Mr. Herbert Armstrong from the earliest days of his ministry in the 20th century when he did that study personally. He was trying to figure out if he thought there was anything to the Bible. And his autobiography shows he got into this study on evolution. And he had to first prove that God exists, that there is a purposeful creator. And one of his proofs was the existence of laws, like gravity, proves that there must be a lawgiver, because these things can't just exist out of the ether. There must have been purpose behind it, and there must be a force of some kind that is actually ensuring it, sustaining it, enforcing it, if you will. You and I think gravity is just automatic by itself. No, it's not. There has to be a force behind it which keeps that law functioning. And that is God. Dr. DeYoung says, attempts to explain gravity have included invisible particles called gravitons that travel between objects. Those are just theories, because the reality is scientists don't know what it is. They can measure the forces. It's very predictable. They can do all kinds of things with the knowledge that they have, but they still can't define what makes it work. It really is an invisible force. He says, cosmic strings and gravity waves have also been suggested, but none have been confirmed. We simply do not know how objects physically interact with each other over vast distances. So God has kept that out of the knowledge base of human beings. All right, so that's the physical aspects of this force called gravity. What are the spiritual, what's the spiritual significance of this particular force? Again, I can't turn to any passage in the Bible that talks about the force of gravity. But are there counterparts that actually give us insight spiritually? I assert that there are. Even as gravity holds everything together physically, God's revealed way of life holds everything together spiritually. A departure from that revealed truth is like rejecting the law of gravity. In the very same way, if gravity as a law were suspended, in a moment of time, everything would start to disintegrate. So I'm going to compare it literally to the force of God's spiritual invisible law. We call it the faith once delivered. Ephesians 4, verse 11. Ephesians 4, verse 11, and he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. Why? Because he wanted some human beings to be the bosses over others? No. For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. According to God's work of love with the chosen people, he set things in motion according to laws, rules, organization, order, for our blessing. It is structure. How for how long? Verse 13, till we all come in the unity of the faith and knowledge of the Son of God unto the perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Verse 14, that we henceforth be no children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men, cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. Oh, there's a lot of people, in essence, that are out there spiritually, religiously, that are denying that gravity exists. When they argue against the laws of God spiritually, including, by the way, Sabbath, holy days, and everything else which we accept as a part of this revelation of God, they are just as much fools as those who would say they're not subject to gravity. That we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine. Verse 15, but by contrast, speaking the truth, affirming the laws in this universe that are real, howbeit invisible. But when you in your life affirm the reality of invisible laws of God, you take them into consideration in what you do and how you behave. Speaking the truth in love may grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted. That's why I picked this passage. The word compacted is used here. You can say it's a stretch. I'm telling you, it confirms the same principle that we're talking about of why everything physical in the universe works in harmony and order. and why the planets actually stay together and don't fly apart and disperse matter and chaos, because there are rules that keep all this stuff together and keep it working in harmony. And the same is absolutely true with the invisible laws that apply to human beings upon this earth, that we call spiritual truth, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplies, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, makes increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. Didn't see gravity anywhere in that passage. But what we're talking about, my dear friends, is order. We're talking about invisible laws of God that create order and stability and provide a means for the people of God to be blessed instead of cursed. Isn't it the same type of operation that you see physically that creates order and maintains everything that you need to live and to thrive upon this earth physically? And the same thing is true invisibly. So when God gave his law, he gave it, he confirmed it to Adam and Eve, he confirmed it later to ancient Israel. He was giving them an understanding of the blueprint for how to be happy and blessed instead of being sad and cursed. You can't see the laws. They couldn't see the laws, which is why it's so easy to deny. When he said, keep my Sabbaths, honor my Sabbaths, and we don't want to. Where's the proof that the seventh day of the week is different than the other six? I can't prove it to you. I can't prove it to anybody else. God says it is. And those who respect it by treating it differently than the other 6 days of the week, I guarantee you, are more blessed than the ones who ignore it and think there's no difference. No, I can't point to a direct cause and effect. Well, if you fail to keep the Sabbath, then a lightning bolt's going to come out of heaven and strike you down, and then you'll know the Sabbath is real. God doesn't have it work that way. Nevertheless, God is the one who says, if you believe the Bible is the Word of God, that his Sabbaths are the sign between him and his people. Jesus Christ confirmed that God made the Sabbath for man. Wasn't made for God. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Meaning it is there to be a blessing to human beings, to mitigate curses for those who reject and ignore the Sabbaths. It's all an invisible operation. I can't tell you how it works any more than I can tell you why gravity is real and why it works. I just know it is. So here's the faith element to come to acknowledge that these invisible laws revealed by God are just as real as the physical ones the scientists can prove by experimentation. And they do have an effect on how happy or unhappy we are. Ephesians 3, verse 16. Ephesians 3, 16, that he would grant you according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might by his Spirit in the inner man. What does this revealed way of life provide? For one who is called, for one who embraces that calling and begins to practice that way, what do you get? You're compared to the individual who acknowledges the reality of physical forces like the laws of thermodynamics, like gravity, and you work within them rather than denying them. You're like the individual that refuses to leap off a cliff because you know you're going to fall and kill yourself or else highly maim yourself, versus the one who wants to say the law is not real and they're going to do what they're going to do. You're compared to the wise individual who recognizes these laws and uses them. To be strengthened with might by his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, and I'll stop right there because that's my point. This revealed way of life makes you rooted and grounded in love, just like the force of gravity makes you rooted and grounded with your feet on a sure foundation. It reminds me of exactly the way Mr. Raymond Cole for years described what it means then to follow God's way. And he would, what would he say? You have to have your feet down. Didn't he say that? Well, there's an indirect reference to the force of gravity. Physically, it's the force of gravity that keeps your feet down instead of floating away. And yet that was the term he used to describe what we're all doing by holding on to this way that was revealed through a chosen servant in the true church of God in the 20th century. And he talked about it in terms of keeping your feet down. Direct reference to the force of gravity, because it applies. Colossians 1:21, and you that were sometimes alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, you were ignorant of these invisible laws which are real, but because you were ignorant, you weren't acknowledging them in the way you made your decisions and what you did, and you were suffering under the curses, even if you didn't know why. You that were sometimes alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now hath he reconciled in the body of his flesh through death to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in his sight. And all of this seems absolutely foolish to the scientists, quote unquote, of the world. Religion, Christianity, believing that Jesus was real and that he died and we can have our sins forgiven because of what he did and we have hope of salvation, whatever that is in the future. And they all think that's foolish. I'm telling you, it's real. It's as real as any other law. It was established by the same creator who made everything physical that you can measure and that you can confirm. These invisible things are real. Now, it takes faith. The just shall live by faith, because you can't prove it to anybody else. But it is real. Verse 23, if, who is going to receive this blessing? If you continue in the faith, what? Grounded and settled. Doesn't say gravity, but gravity is absolutely implied. Physically, that's what makes you grounded and settled upon this earth rather than flying away into outer space. If you continue in the faith, that revealed way of life, grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the gospel, which you have heard, meaning it was taught. You didn't figure it out by your own experimentation, like a religious scientist putting together the truth, and neither did I. We heard it proclaimed by a chosen servant, which is the only way we even have a hope of having it. And we did. If you continue in the faith, grounded and settled, and be not moved away, as Raymond Cole would say, having your feet down, from the hope of the gospel, the promises he's made for your future, you got to believe that that's real and it's going to happen. And that if you make the sacrifices today to honor this law, he is going to give you a reward for all eternity. Which you have heard and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven, wherefore I, Paul, he says, am made a minister. So Paul was one who was called and sent by God, and the churches in Asia Minor wouldn't have known it if it hadn't been for his ministry. They wouldn't have figured it out, and they didn't. They heard it from Paul. And guess what? We had a servant like that in our day, which is the only way that we had it all explained to us. But what happens when those chosen servants, that ministry fails to do the job God sent them to do? Then it's like suspending the law of gravity. Notice Zephaniah 3, verse 3. Zephaniah 3, verse 3. Her princes within her are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves. They gnaw not the bones till the morrow. Verse 4. Her prophets are light. That's the one I wanted to capture here. Her prophets are light and treacherous persons. Just to finish this through verse 5, and we'll go back. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. The just eternal is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. Every morning doth he bring his judgment to light. He fails not, but the unjust knows no shame. So it's the operation of God. It was his true church. He established those servants as princes, as chief, to confirm the word of God to the people. And instead, they did the opposite. Didn't change God, didn't change his laws. He's faithful. But her prophets, those supposedly inspired ones, the ones who should have been inspired to teach the truth, God calls them light. Light and treacherous persons. Well, this is a word in the Hebrew which means to bubble up or froth like boiling water, to be unimportant. Boiling water, it's like the steam, it just flits away. The opposite of the force of gravity, which is predictable and consistent and keeps you down, well rooted. And instead, the prophets, the servants of God, actually were the opposite. They became flighty. They became fickle. They were unstable. They were capricious. They were inconstant. They were volatile. All the things which are the antithesis of the idea of being well rooted and consistent and stable and predictable and unmoving. Consistency in practicing good behaviors. It means to live with gravity. We actually use that word in the English in that way. Not just describing a physical force in science and physics, but to actually talk about behaviors of human beings. We talk about living with gravity. What does that mean? Titus 2, verse 1. Just look at some of these texts you know very well, but you probably have never applied them in this way. But the elements are all there. Here's how God's people are supposed to behave. Titus 2, verse 1 says, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine." So again, not turning to your own interpretation of whatever you want to call truth. No, adhering to what God revealed to be the truth and has always been the truth and will always remain the truth. Attaching yourself to that, making it your own, and then living by it. That the aged men be sober, grave. Now here's the word grave in the English. Meaning what? No, you're supposed to walk around with a stern look on your face. We need to be grave. That's not what it's talking about. It's a derivative of the English word gravity. To be grave, it means to be reliable, to have substance. As Raymond Cole would say, to have your feet down. Not to be flighty. Or as we read in Zephaniah 3, the prophets who were light, flitting about because they would never commit to anything. Everything was relative. Just like the worldwide ministry, by the way, who in the 1970s began to say, what is truth? Well, we have to grow in grace and knowledge. We have some truth, but we still need to grow by changing our doctrine to get rid of more untruth, to get closer. When will we ever get to the whole truth? And they said, never. I call that flighty. I call that light. I call that the opposite of being grounded, being settled, being established, being predictable. The opposite that God shows and proves to us in forces of his law like gravity. So Paul was inspired to write, the aged men should be sober, grave. It means they have substance, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience. It all means they should demonstrate endurance under pressure, constancy. Constancy. Drop down to verse 6. Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded. Same concept. Instead of being flighty and attaching themselves to all kind of foolish things, which young people are wont to do because we need to learn a lot. Verse 7, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works. Pattern. Pattern of good works is what? A habit of predictability, of doing things the right way, of making ourselves trustworthy, Because we actually live by immutable principles rather than changing our standard of what's right and wrong as the whim hits us. In doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity. Oh yeah, but yeah, it doesn't mean the force. But the force of gravity in the universe is the same as the principle which applies to our thinking and our behavior. It's absolutely the same. In doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. It means regardless of what's going on around you or what you're subjected to, you have a program that you fulfill in your life, a standard, a yardstick that you live by no matter what. Is immutable as the law of gravity, which isn't going to be changed or put on pause or in some way negated by any act of man. It's a law that will always be there. It is consistent. It is predictable. And that's what God says he wants our behavior in the faith to be like. 1 Timothy 3, verse 1. 1 Timothy 3, verse 1, this is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, meaning a minister in the church, he desires a good work. Okay, that's, you know, better than wanting to be some celebrity influencer, to want to actually serve God in the church. But there's a requirement for someone who's actually going to do those jobs. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, and of good behavior. Guess what? The individual should be showing a track record somehow of seriousness about living this way of life as an example to others. Given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. Not going around again as a serious taskmaster, you know, saying, you got to obey me because I'm the head of the house. You're talking about a leader in a household who, by the example of Jesus Christ, applies love and mercy and long-suffering and patience in an environment of laws, rules which are predictable and consistent and are a manifestation of the truth of God. How's that? Wouldn't you like to live in a household like that? That's the way it's going to be in the kingdom of God. It's the way the household of God is going to function. If we're signing up for it, hoping that we can receive that eternity in the God family as kings and priests, that's what we're signing up for. An existence that operates within immutable laws. And if we don't like the laws today, we're not going to be there. We need to kind of get on board with him. His laws are real. And he's not going to suspend them because somebody doesn't like them. He's interviewing those of us who will come to agree with him and to embrace him and his way of doing things and like it and make it our own. And so if we set our own households up to apply these same godly principles, it's not the way so many of them did back in the worldwide days in my childhood. And the idea of adhering to the law, then you had these taskmasters as head of households who absolutely, you know, made their families miserable. And that was never what God indicated whatsoever. But what you are talking about is a head of household who does establish a set of principles by which that household is going to operate. Not to abuse and to take advantage of and to oppress those in the family, but as a structure under which you can now thrive. You can know it's predictable. You don't have to worry if the rule is going to change or, you know, what's going to happen from day to day or moment to moment. You can actually have a settled orientation yourself because you live in an environment which is settled and predictable. So gravity absolutely applies from the physical to the spiritual. One that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. You set a standard for the household. Your children will thrive under that when they know what the rules are. And you stick to it. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Dropping down to verse 8. Likewise must the deacons be grave, not stern, with a frown, sour puss everywhere they go. I knew people in the Worldwide Church who thought that was the way to be righteous. Everything they did in the company of other people in the church seemed about how stern they could be. It's not what we're talking about. Likewise, must the deacons be grave. That means they have to have their feet down. They have to actually show an example of gravity, of stability, of immutability in the way that they live and the way that they behave. Not double tongue. There's a proof. You say one thing one time and another time based upon the circumstance. Not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. You know what the truth is because you've been taught it. You believe it and you practice it even when it's hard. Even when it requires incredible sacrifice of what you would want. Because you respect the law of God more than your own whims, your own covetousness, your own idolatry. You put God's law first, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. And let these also first be proved, meaning you don't just accept somebody into the ministry or a service as an example in the church because they talk a good game. There needs to be some evidence in the way they actually make decisions and make decisions over time and make decisions under pressure. Then let them use the office of a deacon being found blameless, not perfect, or else none of us would qualify. But you're talking about someone who has demonstrated their commitment to the yardstick of God's law for the ways they make decisions in their own lives, let alone the way they think about the brethren. And they may make mistakes, but they always adhere in principle to that anchor, which is the revealed truth. Verse 11, even so must their wives be grave, meaning stern and humorless? No. Serious, predictable in good character, someone you can trust, has the right orientation concerning God's truth and the way they deal with others in the church. So must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. Faithfulness in all things, what a concept. Faithfulness in all things, just like you can count on the fact that the law of gravity is going to be there when you wake up in the morning. It's not going to have changed. It's an immutable law set in motion physically by God. It keeps everything in its current ordered, stable pattern in the universe and upon this planet. In the very same way that God then upholds this physical universe with invisible laws that create cohesion, His spiritual laws, which were defined in the revealed faith, provide cohesion to show us how God is bringing all things in this master plan to a glorious conclusion.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented the 9th message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, June 22nd, 2024.